The call of Matthew. Mark chapter 2, verses 13 through 17. And he went out again by the seashore, and all the people were coming to him, and he was teaching them. As he passed by, he saw Levi, the son of Alphaeus, sitting in the tax booth, and said to him, "Follow me." And he got up and followed him. And it happened that he was reclining at the table in his house, and many tax collectors and sinners were dining with Jesus and his disciples, for there were many of them, and they were following him. When the scribes and the Pharisees saw that he was eating with the sinners and tax collectors, they said to his disciples, "Why is he eating and drinking with tax collectors and sinners?" And hearing this, Jesus said to them, "It is not those who are healthy who need a physician, but those who are sick. I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners." And he went out again by the seashore, and all the people were coming to him, and he was teaching them. Jesus was always on the move. He taught wherever he went. What a joy it must have been for them to have him come back to Capernaum. And now his presence down at the seashore. While many joined Jesus, there were some who shied away from his presence. One of those was a man named Levi. Levi means joined in harmony. Levi was the third son of Jacob's wife, Leah. Rachel was his favorite. Leah was her older sister. And the third son she named Levi because she thought after three sons, surely there'll be harmony in our home. Instead of fulfilling the promise of his name, Levi, this Levi became a tax collector. There were two types of taxes in those days, stated taxes and other duties. There was a poll tax, just for being alive, from the time you were 14 to the time you were 65, you had to pay a tax just to live. There was a ground tax. 1/10 of all the grain you produced was taxed. 15% of all the wine or oil that you produced was taken. There was a tax on fish. So this tax collector had set up his tax station on the way to the coast. There was also a 1% tax of your annual income. The duties, and here was the greatest opportunity for abuse, duties, these were taxes for used roads, harbor docks, sales tax, import and export duties. A tax was even paid on every cart that you used. In fact, they would tax every wheel on your cart. And if you didn't have money, that was no problem. They'd extend to you a loan. High interest rates, about the same as our credit cards today. In his commentary, Bill Bell said that the average Israeli tax collector was, first of all, dishonest. They were known to overcharge people, and when someone couldn't pay, they'd extend to them the high-interest loan. They took bribes from the rich and extorted the poor. They were also disqualified. Tax collectors were not allowed to give testimony as witnesses because no one trusted them. Their tithes weren't even accepted. They were disloyal. Though he was Jewish, he was considered a traitor because he worked for the Romans. He had turned his back on his family, his nation, and even his God. They were also detested. Tax collectors were classed with murderers and robbers. Only they were considered the worst. Jewish people despised them more than Roman officials or soldiers. Sometimes children would come up and spit at tax collectors. This practice was encouraged by their parents. They were disgraced. By extension, Levi's family would also have been ostracized from the community. He was a letdown to his family and a source of shame. He was defiled, considered an outcast, and was excommunicated from the synagogue. According to the rabbis, there was no hope for a loser like Levi. Too many Christians would have just walked by Levi. But Jesus didn't. Jesus is in the business of changing lives. Centuries ago, a number of workmen were seen dragging a great marble block into the city of Florence, Italy. It had come from the famous marble quarry of Carrara and was intended to be made into a statue of a famous Old Testament prophet, but it contained imperfections. And when the great sculptor Donatello saw it, he refused it at once. So there it lay in the cathedral yard, a useless block. One day, another sculptor caught sight of the flawed block, but he examined it. There arose in his mind something of immense beauty, and he resolved to sculpt it. For 2 years, the artist fervently worked on this piece of art. Finally, on January 25th, 1504, the greatest artists of the day assembled to see what he had made of the despised and rejected block. Among them were Botticelli, Leonardo da Vinci, Pietro Perugino, the teacher of Raphael. As the veil dropped to the floor, the statue was met with a chorus of praise. It was a masterpiece. Michelangelo's David, one of the greatest works of art the world had ever seen. David is 17 feet tall and weighs over 12,000 pounds. Jesus saw in the flawed life of Levi a Matthew. Matthew means gift of God. Jesus sees in us what no one else sees. Jesus wanted the man no one else wanted. Think of the difference this must have made for Levi's family. His mother had wanted him to provide harmony in their home. Matthew became a gift of God through the gospel he wrote, bringing harmony between God and the world. When you think of the books of the Bible, the books of the New Testament, you always say Matthew's name first. He is the Matthew of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. How did Matthew respond? He got up and followed him. Matthew followed with no hesitation. He left all of his taxing paraphernalia, and the research I did said that at that time, tax collecting was kind of a franchise. You gave Rome what they wanted, and whatever you could make above and beyond that was yours to keep. Matthew left everything to follow Jesus. What a difference it must have made in his life and in the life of his family. We hear people even today talk about the family name, ruining or honoring the family name. In the end, because of Jesus, Matthew honored his family's name. Peter, Andrew, James, and John could and all did go back to their fishing, but Matthew could never go back. He was all in. What have you left to follow Jesus? For Matthew, it was everything. So he looked at Jesus and he said, well, what can I do? What do I have to offer? I'm a tax collector and I've left all of that behind me. And he said, well, there's one thing I can do. I can throw a pretty good party. And so he invited Jesus and the gang over to his house for one last fling. And he invited all of his tax collecting sinner friends. And they all came. And he must have thought, well, what would happen if Jesus is able to get a hold of their lives as he was able to get a hold of my life? What if Jesus is able to change their lives as he changed my life? So he brought them all in, fed them a good meal. They were reclining at the table. And then, of course, who showed up? The scribes of the Pharisees sitting there in judgment. It's interesting how they were always there, ready to criticize. Jesus said that he didn't come. It is not those who are healthy who need a physician, but those who are sick. I didn't come to call the righteous. I came to call the sinners. What do you think Levi thought when Jesus looked at him, a tax collector, the scum of the earth, and said, follow me? He must have thought, that's a good one. That's funnier than a flat tax. I'm a sinner, and a big one at that. Why would Jesus call me? Because Jesus is in the business of changing lives. Who do you expect to see when you go to a doctor's office when you're sick? A bunch of healthy people or a bunch of sick people? You wouldn't want to go to the hospital whose mission statement reads, "We're here for the healthy. If you're sick, stay away." Let's be like Jesus. C.T. Studd was famous for saying, some wish to live within the sound of church or chapel bell. I want to run a rescue shop within a yard of hell. I think Perry Jones would agree. I was in his office one day and he pointed to a bench outside the window and he said he was looking out the window one day and saw a man dying of an overdose. And he grabbed his Narcan and ran outside and administered to it and essentially brought the man back to life again. That's the kind of ministry he's involved in. Instead of salvation, the Pharisees would, it says in the Bible, tie up heavy burdens, hard to bear, and lay them on people's shoulders. But they are not themselves willing to move them with their finger. We need to remember Paul's advice to Timothy. It's a trustworthy statement, deserving all acceptance, that Christ Jesus came into the world to save sinners, among whom I am foremost of all, the greatest of sinners. We need to remember, as Russell Moore wrote in his book, Onward, Engaging the Culture Without Losing the Gospel. The next Billy Graham might be a drunk right now. The next Jonathan Edwards might be the man driving in front of you with the Darwin Fish bumper decal. The next Charles Wesley might be a profanity-spewing hip-hop artist right now. The next Charles Spurgeon might be managing an abortion clinic right now. The next Mother Teresa might be a heroin addict right now. The next Augustine of Hippo might be a sexually promiscuous cult member right now, just like, come to think of it, the first Augustine of Hippo was. Jesus is in the business of changing lives. And I think he likes a challenge, because he certainly had one with Matthew. We have a responsibility to seek out the lost, just like Jesus and Matthew sought out the lost. We as Christians need to get back into circulation. When Oliver Cromwell ruled England, the nation experienced a crisis when they ran out of silver and couldn't mint any coins. Cromwell sent his soldiers to the cathedral to see if any silver was available. They reported back that the only silver was in the statue of the saints, to which Cromwell replied, "Melt down the saints and get them back into circulation." We need to be out there. We need to be reaching out to people who don't know the Lord, the Matthews of our age. Would you consider today, as Matthew did a long time ago, "I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back."